This is Teddy Roosevelt, just back from charging up San Juan Hill. Damn it, Professor Buzzkill was already at the top, collecting historical evidence, busting myths, and taking names. I have to admit that he's a worthy competitor and a damn fine rough rider. Join me in listening to this episode. It's sure to be bully.
It's getting to be mid-March, and all good Buzzkillers' minds turn towards things Irish. We've done shows before on St. Patrick and on the Irish slaves myth, and of course, they were quite serious shows and brought up important historical issues and themes. But this March, we thought we'd be a little more lighthearted, yet probably generate more comment and hate mail than our other Irish episodes. That's because I want to bring up an intriguing aspect of Irish history, the nature of Irish identity and the strength of the belief in Irish identity. So I should apologize in advance to the entire Irish side of the Buzzkill dynasty, to all of Irish America, and to many of my favorite Buzzkillers in Ireland, especially Farmer Michael and his lovely wife, Kathleen. They'll be sure to give me both barrels after they've heard this episode. I want to talk about three quintessentially Irish things that are actually British. And I'll save my rants about conceptions of national identities and the fluidity of such national identities for the end of the show. And let's start at the very top. You can't get much more Irish than St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland. He was born, however, in Britain around the 5th century AD. Accounts differ from AD 460 to AD 493. And he was born to an aristocratic Christian family with a townhouse, a country villa, and plenty of slaves. But Patrick professed no real interest in Christianity as a young boy. At 16, however, his world turned. He was kidnapped and sent overseas to tend sheep as a slave in the chilly mountainous countryside of Ireland for 7 years. It was, by his own account, a pretty horrible life. But he had a religious conversion while he was there, or religious intensification, and he became a very deeply believing Christian. Now, according to folklore, a voice came to Patrick in his dreams telling him to escape, and he found passage on a pirate ship back to Britain, where he was reunited with his family. The voice, the same voice, that dream voice, then later told him to go back to Ireland. According to Patrick's own confessions, that's the title of his sort of very, very short autobiography, quote, "I saw a man coming, as it were, from Ireland. His name was Victoricus, and he carried many letters and gave me one of them. I read the heading, The Voice of the Irish. As I began the letter, I imagined in that moment that I heard the voice of those very people who were near the wood of Falkirk, which is beside the Western Sea, and they cried out, as with one voice, We appeal to you, holy servant boy, to come and walk among us. Patrick got ordained as a priest from a local bishop, and he went back and spent the rest of his life trying to convert the Irish to Christianity. And his work in Ireland was tough. He was constantly beaten up by thugs. He was harassed by the Irish royalty at the time, and he was admonished by his British superiors at home. Look, how come you're not converting more souls? How come it isn't going faster? Didn't, however, ban the snakes from Ireland. Didn't get rid of the snakes, as the famous legend has it. You'll have to listen to our St. Patrick episode to hear the full story about that. And after he died on March 17th, 461, Patrick was largely forgotten. But slowly, mythology grew up around him and the idea of him and the history of him. And centuries later, he was honored as the patron saint of Ireland. Moving to slightly more recent times, I want to talk about something called crack. Not the drug that you're thinking about, but C-R-A-I-C. One of the words most closely connected to Ireland and Irish culture, particularly Irish socializing. It generally means to have fun, especially with a group of friends in a circle, joking around and enjoying an evening out. It's often used informally to refer to spontaneous fun or enjoyment, especially when trying to convince someone to come out and join the group. Oh, I think I'll stay in tonight. There's nothing much going on. Oh, come on out with us just for the crack. It's used in anticipation of how an event or gathering will go. The crack will be mighty. And of course, people rate the quality of an evening based on the crack. The crack was 90, meaning that it was fantastic. The Irish have a healthy skepticism towards exaggeration and would never say that an evening out was 100% perfect. 90 is very high on the Irish scale. But you know what I'm going to say, buzzkillers? The origins of crack are actually English, not Irish. Crack, C-R-A-C-K, is an old English word meaning loud conversation or bragging talk. It comes from the Middle English word crack, C-R-A-K, and it was used in England, particularly Northern England and Scotland, for centuries to refer to energized talking, again, usually in a group. But by the early 19th century, it was also used to mean gossip or the latest news, or sometimes it was just used in a greeting. Chat, conversation, news, gossip, the crack. That's how it was used in Northern England and Scotland in the 19th century. Perhaps some of you buzzkillers will know the 1850s song, The Work of the Weavers, not because you're from the 1850s, but because it became very popular later on. The Work of the Weavers starts off essentially by saying, singing, we're all met together here to sit and to crack. And it was popular song, and important in the 20th century folk song movement. For instance, Lee Hayes, Ronnie Gilman, Pete Seeger, and Frank Hellerman formed The Weavers, a folk singing group, partly inspired by the song's title. So how did crack become Irish then? Well, sociolinguists have traced it as moving from Scotland to Ulster, the northeastern province of Ireland, in the mid-20th century. It was still spelled C-R-A-C-K in the 50s and 60s, but as it migrated to the rest of Ireland by the late 1960s and 70s, it was Gaelicized into crack, C-R-A-I-C, and has become one of the words most closely connected with Irish social culture. Over the same period, that is, you know, the mid to late 20th century, it faded out of usage more or less in England and Scotland. And by the late 20th century, crack was so thoroughly Irish that it began to creep back into English usage, especially among young people in Britain, but using the Irish spelling and the Irish meaning crack, C-R-A-I-C. And finally, I want to talk about Danny Boy. The subject of the, quote, national, unquote, origins of perhaps that most famous of Irish songs, Danny Boy, is almost certain to set people off. Again, all hate mail should be directed to info@professorbuzzkill.com. Danny Boy was written in the English town of Bath by the English lyricist Frederick Weatherly in 1910. It fit in with the romantic ballad or air tradition, singing an air, if you know what I mean, that was prevalent in the 19th and early 20th centuries and became particularly singable when Weatherly's sister sent him the sheet music for the Londonderry Air, which was a tune from the 19th century. And Weatherly adapted his lyrics to better fit that tune. He had originally written it to another tune, but the melody of the Londonderry Air was better, so he adapted the lyrics to fit it. That's the song we know today. The lyrics to Danny Boy do not refer to Ireland or any place in Ireland or any place in Scotland or Wales. The song could have been set almost anywhere in the Celtic world, since particularly the word Glen from Glen to Glen in the opening verse is as much Scottish as it is Irish. Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. Not only that, Weatherly's original intent seems to have been for the song to be sung by a young woman to a young man, saying goodbye for whatever reason and yearning for the time when he will return. And fitting with the tragic tone heard in so many ballads of the time, the young girl refers to the possibility that she will have died by the time he gets back. But when you come and all the flowers are dying, if I am dead, and as dead I well may be, and on, you know the words. We're not entirely certain that Weatherly insisted that the song be sung by a woman, but early sheet music of Danny Boy often said that the phrase "Eily dear" should replace Danny Boy when it is sung by a man. So the song is to Eily dear, coming from the male perspective. And yet, the song seems to have been given a different interpretation by the mid-20th century. Rather than a plaintive ballad sung by a broken-hearted young woman, it's often thought to be a parent singing to a son who's leaving Ireland because of the famine or because of work migration or some other reason that drove the Irish diaspora, especially to North America. And we'll play Danny Boy in a minute. But this brings me to my conclusion, to my historian rant against the claims of the purity of national identity and the national origin of many aspects of cultures. Despite what the supposed genetic studies of your DNA by 23andMe and Ancestry.com might tell you about the specific geographic origins of your ancestors, precious few things that we characterize as Irish or American or any other nationality come down to us through the ages, you know, untouched by other cultures. Sure, you say this is obvious for relatively new countries like the United States, but ancient cultures, such as the Irish culture in Europe, go way, way back. They must be different. They must be more pure. But even the most obvious cultural identifier, language, is almost never pure. And nowhere is this more obvious than in the historic languages of the islands of Britain and Ireland. Ancient Celtic, Norse, Saxon, Germanic, Latin, and Romance languages have flowed over in those islands, flowed through those people, and led to many blends and hybrids that we have nowadays. So let me leave you then with the first recording of Danny Boy, which is dated to 1917. It was recorded by Ernestine Schumann Heink, who was born in Czechoslovakia of German Bohemian ancestry and became a popular American operatic singer in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. So we have a Czech Bohemian German American singing an English air to a tune of probable Irish origin that can refer to almost any part of northwestern Celtic Europe, but that has almost all of us weeping in our beer at its beauty and multiple meanings. Talk to you next week.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you, and I must bide. But come living when summer's in the meadow, or all the valley's hush and white with snow. If I'll be here, it's a sign or a shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny.
Hello, this is Antonia Buzzkill. Please support my daddy by going to ProfessorBuzzkill.com and clicking on the Patreon button. While you're there, subscribe to his email list and shop the Buzzkill bookshelf. Follow him on Facebook, on Twitter at BuzzkillProf, and on Instagram at ProfessorBuzzkill. Professor Buzzkill is part of Entertainment One's podcast network and is available on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and all major podcast apps. Please leave a review while you're there. Thanks for listening.